Hello, I'm Dan Saladino. Welcome to Business Daily. And today we look at a very British pickle. The UK Parliament is deadlocked over Brexit. The dreaded no-deal scenario, where Britain leaves the EU on the 29th of March without any agreement to continue existing trade relations, is looking like a very real possibility. It's a prospect making many ordinary Brits anxious. But imagine you're in the food business, with crops in the ground or perhaps import orders in the pipeline and shelves that need to be filled on March 30th.
I'm Guy Watson. I'm from Riverford Farm. It's January the 20th on a cold morning. I'm standing in the middle of a field of winter brassicas trying to work out what we can pick for our veg boxes this week.
Guy Watson recorded a little audio diary for us, capturing his mood as he set about sourcing the fruit and veg that would fill the 70,000 boxes destined for homes around the UK. At this time of year, and increasingly so towards March 29th, much of that food will need to come from the continent.
There is a period between early March and, say, mid-June, when green vegetables are in very short supply within the UK. Indeed, I would estimate that 80% plus of them will be imported, mostly from the south of Spain and south of Italy. This is the period that we call the hungry gap. I am absolutely terrified of the implications of a no-deal or a disorderly Brexit. I mean, from our point of view at Riverford, it will take about 4 days lost trading to wipe out any potential profit. It'll probably take a fortnight for us to breach our banking covenants and be effectively bankrupt after 30 years of building the business.
On December the 18th last year, the Department for Exiting the European Union published guidance that explained the government was going ahead with the advanced phase of its no-deal planning. Leading up to that guidance, 106 technical notices had been published, among them a formal alert to ports and traders highlighting potential disruption on the border and calling on businesses to ready their supply chains.
I think the public's beginning to get that food is actually not in warehouses, it's on the motorway. It's a just-in-time ordering system.
Professor Tim Lang has been researching the potential impact of Brexit on our food for the past 4 years.
And when you look at the figures, it's a vast amount of food comes through Dover. 2.5 million lorries a year come through. 5 million tons of food comes into Britain. It's huge flows. And I know people at the top of the food industry who've desperately tried to brief the Prime Minister, and they just haven't really been taken very seriously until quite recently. And suddenly, with the prospect, real prospects of a no-deal Brexit, suddenly the planning is going very fast indeed.
In June 2016, in the days that immediately followed the referendum, we started to interview members of the food industry about the work in the supply chain they envisaged would need to get underway urgently. Among them was Ian Wright of the Food and Drink Federation, which represents 7,000 UK food businesses and global players such as Nestlé and Unilever. This is what he told us back in 2016.
We've got to get on with it and get to a solution now. There has been, as far as I can see, no planning at all for this eventuality. And now we have to help them plan very, very quickly.
2.5 years later, I caught up with Ian Wright in his central London office, where no-deal planning was underway.
How much of your time now is taken up with this?
Since mid-autumn of last year, I've been working on average 85, 90-hour weeks, and 90% of what I do is Brexit. It's much more complex than I had ever realised. We've spent a lot of time on what is the capacity of the Dover-Calais route to get food in and out of the UK. And if that's closed off, what other routes can we use? It's very, very interesting. And if it wasn't a national crisis, it would be really, really rewarding.
Do you think perhaps for decades we've been relatively complacent about food in Britain?
Yes, I do. I think the one good thing to come out of Brexit so far has been that we have inadvertently perhaps, provoked something of a national debate on the importance of food, that food is a matter of national security. The last time we had a national food strategy was 1945. It certainly pushed government into thinking about these issues deeply, and that at least is a good thing.
From the biggest players in the UK's food supply chain, let's hear from a much smaller one, a specialist in one of the main areas of concern, fresh produce.
I've come to London at 4:30 in the morning and it's freezing. It's way before the start of my normal working day, but for the people around me in New Covent Garden Market, it's coming towards the end of theirs. This is still the UK's biggest wholesale market, supplying caterers, restaurants and shops, from the most basic produce to some of the most exotic. I've come to meet one particular trader, Michael Hyams, a.k.a. the Mushroom Man.
Good morning, Michael.
Come in. Good to see you.
Yeah, and you.
Michael places orders in the early hours of the morning, and towards the end of the same day, the most extraordinary food starts to arrive at the market.
It's a small box of this tangle of yellows and browns.
They're just so tiny in the forest in Spain, actually. These are Spanish. These are the important mushrooms, the wild mushrooms. They're the ones that pay all the boys' wages. We just source them from everywhere. And now the trompette, the mouton, Giro is from Spain / Portugal.
Mushroom man.
Yes. All right, didn't get that.
As someone whose livelihood is based around importing fresh produce with a limited shelf life, what does a no-deal scenario mean to him?
Our whole business is based on continuity, day in, day out. But if the trucks can't get through, the trucks can't get through. I don't know what we can do this end. If products are delayed for too long, then they're not worth selling. Just so perishable. And my suppliers are saying the same to me. What are we going to do? What do you know about Brexit? They're saying to me. No one knows anything.
How much more could you source from the UK that would fit what your customers want and need?
The regular cultivated mushrooms, like the buttons and flats, portobellas, those could be sourced in the UK. But there's a price difference. The reason we're buying from Poland is because it's cheaper. And the margins are so small, it's crucial.
If, in the event of a no deal, there are new customs checks and regulatory controls, the Freight Transport Association and the Road Haulage Association have warned of significant delays between Kent and northern France. Meanwhile, preparations have also been underway on the other side of the Channel. The BBC's Paris correspondent, Lucy Williamson, went to see preparations at the border.
Outside his office, the French Prime Minister, Edouard Philippe, announced €50 million of investment to prepare the country for a hard Brexit. With no clear answer from Westminster, Eurotunnel have just begun work on a new site in Calais to deal with the extra checks that could be needed after March.
And those checks will make an impact on what comes into the UK and how much it will cost, which is why the UK's supermarkets have been worried about the possibility of no deal. The UK's biggest food retailers are represented by the British Retail Consortium. Its head of food and sustainability is Andrew Opie.
So about 90% of our lettuces, 80% of our tomatoes, around about three quarters of our soft fruit, all either comes from Europe or comes through Europe. If you then get disruption at the ports, then that is going to have a significant knock-on effect in the availability and the shelf life of fresh produce on our shelves in supermarkets. So we don't know what approach Europe is going to take with border controls. And that is the real dilemma. We don't know till we get to the 29th of March necessarily what the real impact is likely to be.
So, fresh produce remains a challenge, but in recent months, the major retailers have been stockpiling what they can to minimise any impact on customers. But that message hasn't stopped the rise of another food and Brexit phenomenon, the preppers.
Are you stockpiling your own supplies of food just in case there are problems? Talk us through your store cupboard. Or maybe you think this is absolutely ridiculous scaremongering. There is no need to start hoarding food. This is just Brexit. It is not World War II.
come to Chatham in Kent to meet a family who in recent weeks have been building up their own supply of food.
Hi. Come on in. You found the place.
How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I was visiting a family of four as they were getting ready for their evening meal. Dad was cooking and the kids were doing homework.
We're a pretty normal family. We live in a terraced house with two children. Mum and Dad both work. We're worried about supply of food. We're not prepper survivalists. We don't have bunkers or guns. We're not preparing for the end of civilization. But what we are doing is getting some stuff in that can smooth out bumps in the road, gaps in supply. This is where it probably goes weird.
Okay, we're just going from the kitchen.
Just moving from the kitchen into the living room.
In a cupboard, in the sitting room, and in boxes under the stairs were the supplies of extra food, from tinned vegetables and tinned fish to packets of lentils and noodles, all set aside, just in case.
Lots of tins.
lots of packets of rice. The scenario that plays out in my mind is not one of marauding hordes looking for food. It's one of a bad snowstorm when the supermarket's empty for 3 days in advance. The thing about just-in-time supply chains is that when they break, it does take a while to backfill them back up again, and people are worried.
And for me, that helps answer the question, why was it some people had decided to start prepping? Well, at a time when so much is taking place around us that we can't control, then perhaps reducing any of the uncertainties in our lives, however small, takes on new meaning.
We're in an incredibly unsettling period. Globally, nationally, can I allay some of my anxieties about what this means for me and my kids by buying a few instant mashed potato and extra chickpeas and corned beef? Well, maybe. Does that make me ridiculous? Possibly. Do I feel a bit better about it? Yeah, I do. So it's kind of helping me manage my own mental health and my response to what's going on. And I'm very happy to be proven wrong and not have to use any of this.
And yet, it's exactly this possibility of food insecurity that has reinforced the view of many Leave voters within the food and farming world, that our food future will be better outside the EU and its common agricultural policy.
My family business is a small mixed dairy and arable farm.
Emily Norton is not only involved in a family farming business, but also currently exploring possible food futures for the UK as a Nuffield research scholar.
The interesting thing that this whole situation highlights is our exposure to those international supply chains and perhaps the weakness that that brings us as a country if we're not able to feed ourselves because we're so dependent on overseas supply chains in order to meet the demands of UK consumers. But is that exposing us to too high a risk? Perhaps this is the time when agricultural policy can really start thinking about that again.
But how do you lessen that dependency on parts of the world that can produce fresh produce at times of the year when we can't? We expect it now.
We absolutely do, but I also think that there is a great future for productivity improvements in this country to meet some of that demand. What we need is certainty of investment in order to be able to invest in, for example, greenhouses, in indoor production, and the future of vertical farming and controlled environment agriculture. There's huge possibilities in the future to be able to make sure that we are doing these things as closely as possible to the populations that depend on them.
Brexit is giving us an extremely wide range of ideas of what our food future might look like. Some underpinned by the excitement of innovation, others shaped more by ideology.
My name's Tim Wurstall. I am a senior fellow at the Adam Smith Institute in London.
We spoke to Tim Wurstall in 2016, in the days that followed the referendum, which gave the outcome he had spent decades campaigning for.
Wonderful. Superb. First decent decision made in 20 years.
In the 2.5 years since, he's continued to write about Brexit, food and trade, arguing that outside of the EU, the free market will provide. A few days ago, over Skype, he spoke to me again from his home in Portugal.
So let's imagine we leave on the 29th of March. We end up with a WTO terms, no deal Brexit. We get to trade with the rest of the world how we decide we would like to trade with the rest of the world. What will then happen? We Britons, when we go to the supermarket, will have all of the finest foods of the world laid out for us at the cheapest possible price they can be provided. And isn't that just a tragedy?
But Tim, a House of Lords committee did its own research on Brexit last year and concluded that if an agreement can't be negotiated, we're likely to be faced with an average tariff on food imports of 22%. That surely will inevitably translate into more expensive food.
They have taken those WTO tariffs as being the tariffs that we must charge on imports into the United Kingdom. That is incorrect. I went and talked to the WTO in Geneva. The WTO tariffs are a maximum that we may charge if we wish to. If we don't wish to charge them, we can charge 0%. Nothing.
But the Lords Committee did look at that scenario and they said zero tariffs would devastate our own food producers and farmers.
Me, I argue for consumers. So let's have cheap food. Let's not have tariffs on food from anywhere. If farmers can't make money on that situation, well, farmers can go out of business.
Tim Worstall brings us almost to the end of today's Business Daily, but I will give the final word to vegetable farmer Guy Watson, standing in his field, still having to think ahead to a possible no-deal scenario in just over 50 days' time. For him, this goes way beyond economic theory. He's dealing with a food reality.
To bridge the hungry gap, we 10 years ago bought a farm in France to grow vegetables specifically for this period, and the first lorry of lettuce and spinach does normally leave at the last week in March or the first week in April, and thereafter there is virtually a lorry every day. If we can't get those lorries over the channel, we will be wiped out very, very quickly by a disorderly Brexit. So I hope to God that our politicians in Westminster get their acts together.
What would you say, Guy, to anyone listening who thinks that sounds like scaremongering?
I'm almost too angry to speak, really, at this being called Project Fear. For someone who spends their days in the fields growing vegetables, bent over, getting wet, with mud on my boots, and to be told by people who have no idea how their food is produced that this is Project Fear, you know, makes me actually incandescent with rage.